347, A Forgotten Conference. I had to go to Amsterdam last week for a conference. I arrived at the airport in plenty of time and checked in, but I only had one small case, so I decided to take it on the plane as hand luggage. As the flight was not due to board for 45 minutes, I went to a cafe, sat down, and ordered a cup of coffee. While I was sitting there, drinking my coffee and reading the paper, I was vaguely aware of a woman and her child coming to sit at the next table. I did not pay much attention to them, though, and when my flight was called, I reached for my case and left. An hour later, the plane was in the air, and I decided to look at the conference program to see what I wanted to attend. Imagine my horror when I opened the case and found it was full of picture books and children's toys. And imagine what the woman must have thought about a case full of men's clothes and scientific papers.
348. The Famous Forgers. Robert Spring, a 19th century forger, was so good at his profession that he was able to make his living for 15 years by selling false signatures of famous Americans. Spring was born in England in 1813 and arrived in Philadelphia in 1858 to open a bookstore. At first, he became rich by selling his small but genuine collection of early U.S. autographs. Discovering his ability at copying handwriting, he began imitating signatures of George Washington and Ben Franklin and writing them on the title pages of old books. To lessen the chance of detection, he sent his forgeries to England and Canada for sale and circulation. Forgers have a hard time selling their products. A forger can't approach a respectable buyer, but must deal with people who don't have much knowledge in the field. Forgers have many ways to make their work look real. For example, they buy old books to use the aged paper of the title page, and they can treat paper and ink with chemicals. In Spring's time, right after the Civil War, Britain was still fond of the southern states, so Spring invented a respectable maiden lady known as Miss Fanny Jackson, the only daughter of General Stonewall Jackson. For several years, Miss Fanny's financial problems forced her to sell a great number of letters and manuscripts belonging to her famous father. Spring had to work very hard to satisfy the demand. All this activity did not prevent Spring from dying in poverty, leaving sharp-eyed experts the difficult task of separating his forgeries from the originals.
349. The American President. Thomas Jefferson was inaugurated on March 4, 1801. He was the first president to take the oath of office in the nation's permanent capital, Washington, D.C. Although Washington was a new city, it was already familiar to President Jefferson. In fact, Jefferson had helped plan the Capitol's streets and public buildings. Besides being a city planner and architect, the new president was a writer, a scientist, and the inventor of several gadgets and tools. After his inauguration, Jefferson moved into the presidential palace. The palace was more than a home. It contained offices for the president and some of his staff and advisors. It also included dining and reception rooms, where the president could entertain congressmen. However, President Jefferson did not give many formal parties. This was partly because there was no First Lady. Jefferson's wife had died in 1782. But it was also because Jefferson liked to live in a simple fashion. Once, he showed up for an important meeting wearing old clothes and down-at-the-heel slippers. Neither Washington nor Adams would have ever dressed so casually. Jefferson was different from the first two presidents in other ways, too. He disagreed with them about how the country should be run and about what part a president should play in running it.
350. The Great Man. Robert Owen was born in Wales in 1771. At the age of 10, he went to work. His employer had a large private library, so Owen was able to educate himself. He read a lot in his spare time, and at 19, he was given the job of superintendent at a Manchester cotton mill. He was so successful there that he persuaded his employer to buy the New Lanark Mills in Scotland. When he arrived at New Lanark, it was a dirty little town with a population of 2,000 people. Nobody paid any attention to the workers' houses or their children's education. The conditions in the factories were very bad. There was a lot of crime, and the men spent most of their wages on alcoholic drinks. Owen improved the houses. He encouraged people to be clean and save money. He opened a shop and sold the workers cheap, well-made goods to help them. He limited the sale of alcoholic drinks. Above all, he was concerned with the children's education. In 1816, he opened the first free primary school in Britain. People came from all over the country to visit Owen's factory. They saw that the workers were healthier and more efficient than in other towns. Their children were better fed and better educated. Owen tried the same experiment in the United States. He bought some land there in 1825, but the community was too far away. He could not keep it under control and lost most of his money. Owen never stopped fighting for his ideas. Above all, he believed that people are not born good or bad. He was a practical man, and his ideas were practical. If you give people good working conditions, he thought, they will work well, and the most important thing of all, if you give them the chance to learn, they will be better people.
351. A piece of bread. Three friends decided to sail around the world in a small yacht. They loaded it with food and water and set off. They traveled to many beautiful places and were having a wonderful time. Until one day, when they had been at sea for about a month, a fierce storm blew up. Great waves crashed down on their little yacht. The mast broke, and the yacht was soon thrown against some rocks near a deserted island. The three friends were able to struggle to the island, taking with them as much food as they could carry. Not a tree, not a bush, not a flower grew on the island. There was not an animal of any kind, not even a bird or an insect. For a few weeks the three men were able to live on the food they had saved, but at last it was gone, except for one piece of bread. They decided that whoever had the best dream the next night could have the bread. The next morning, they took turns describing their dreams. The first man said that he had dreamed he was in the world's most wonderful restaurant. He had eaten the finest meal of his life and drunk some of the finest wines. He said it was one of the best dreams he had ever had. The second man described how he had dreamed about a magic carpet. Sitting on this carpet, he had traveled to all the wonderful places in the world and been the guest of great kings and queens. It had been a truly exciting dream. The men who had described their dreams then turned to the third man. "Tell us your dream," they said. "My dream was very simple," he said. "I dreamed that the bread was going bad and would soon be moldy. I didn't want to waste the bread, so as soon as I woke up, I ate it."
352. The Foolish Man. Cyril Prout was a very vain man and spent a great deal of time looking at himself in the mirror. He even went to the barber shop every week to have his hair dyed. Although he was nearly 50, he didn't want people to know his age, so he did not want to have any gray hair. He also spent most of his money on clothes. He always wore the latest fashions and bought his clothes from the most expensive shops. Cyril believed that every woman thought he was handsome. He did not have any women friends, but he had an explanation for this. "Women think they will have too much competition," he told himself. "They do not want to risk losing me. That's why they will not go out with me." But then something happened that even Cyril could not explain. One day, he bought a new shirt from a high-fashion men's shop. It was very expensive and made of brightly colored material. It was the kind of shirt Cyril loved. When he got home and took it out of the box, he found a note pinned to it. The note said, "Please write to me and send me a photograph of yourself." The note was signed Marilyn Armstrong, and there was an address to write to. Cyril immediately wrote to Marilyn, telling her all about himself. Then he put a photograph of himself in the envelope, a very old one, and sent it off. A week passed, and then he received a reply. He opened it quickly, hoping there would be a photograph of a beautiful woman inside, and that she would agree to meet him. However, although the letter was from Marilyn Armstrong, it was very disappointing to Cyril. "Dear Cyril," he read, "thank you for writing to me. I work in the factory that made the shirt you bought. Everyone here just wanted to find out what kind of fool would buy such an awful shirt."
353. The Lost Receipt. As my train wasn't due to leave for another hour, I had plenty of time to spare. After buying some newspapers to read on the journey, I made my way to the luggage office to collect the heavy suitcase I had left there 3 days before. There were only a few people waiting, and I took out my wallet to find the receipt for my case. The receipt didn't seem to be where I had left it. I emptied the contents of the wallets, and railway tickets, money, scraps of paper, and photographs fell out of it. But no matter how hard I searched, the receipt was nowhere to be found. When my turn came, I explained the situation sorrowfully to the assistant. The man looked at me suspiciously, as if to say that he had heard this type of story many times, and asked me to describe the case. I told him that it was an old, brown-looking object, no different from the many cases I could see on the shelves. The assistant then gave me a form and told me to make a list of the chief contents of the case. If they were correct, he said, I could take the case away. I tried to remember all the articles I had hurriedly packed and wrote them down as they came to me. After I had done this, I went to look among the shelves. There were hundreds of cases there, and for one dreadful moment, it occurred to me that if someone had picked the receipt up, he could have easily claimed the case already. This hadn't happened, fortunately, for after a time, I found the case lying on its side high up in a corner. After examining the articles inside, the assistant was soon satisfied that it was mine and told me I could take the case away. Again, I took out my wallet, this time to pay. I pulled out a 10-shilling note and the lost receipt slipped out with it. I couldn't help blushing and looked up at the assistant. He was nodding his head knowingly, as if to say that he had often seen this happen before, too.
354. Generation Gap.
Young people are given too much freedom nowadays, and as a result, they have lost respect for their parents and their elders generally.
I don't think so. My parents never interfered with my plans too much. They advised me, but never forced me to do anything I didn't want to do. I think I respect and love them for this.
Are you quite independent of them now?
Oh, yes. As soon as I left school and started my studies as a nurse, I became independent financially. I have a government grant, which is enough for me, but I still stay with them a lot, you know.
You seem very close to your parents.
I am. I know that many young people today say they have nothing in common with their parents. But I'm very lucky, because I get along very well with them. What about you?
Well, we value family life very much in my country. I'm also very fond of my family. But I don't always get along very well with my parents. They try to control me too much.
But they allow you to come to study in England on your own?
Yes, but only after a lot of persuasion.
My parents treat me as an adult, and your parents treat you as a child. As I said, I'm lucky. Some English parents interfere too much. 355. China's joining WTO. Nowadays, people are talking more and more about the advantages and disadvantages of China's joining WTO. Opinions differ greatly. Some hold that China will definitely gain more by paying a great deal less taxes on her imports. Others think that China will certainly lose more since many of her domestic products cannot compete with foreign imports, either in quality or in price. In my opinion, China's joining WTO is a matter of great significance. Politically, when China enters WTO, her position as a big socialist power in international economic affairs will be acknowledged, and her influence on the development of world economy and trade will become increasingly greater. Economically, though, foreign foods, with their better quality and cheaper price, may occupy a large part of her domestic market, China can make more profits by considerably increasing the amount of goods exported to foreign countries. Moreover, the broad masses of Chinese consumers will benefit a great deal from purchasing foreign products. Finally, China's joining WTO will certainly have a positive effect on her future economic development. Taking all things into consideration, there will be more advantages for China when she joins WTO.
356. The young and the old sometimes agree. Young people and older people do not always agree. They sometimes have different ideas about living, working, and playing. But in one special program in New York State, adults and teenagers live together in peace. Each summer, 200 teenagers and 50 adults live together for 8 weeks as members of a special work group. Everyone works several hours each day. The aim is not just to keep busy, it is to find meaning and enjoyment in work. Some teenagers work in the woods or on the farms near the village. Some learn to make furniture and to build houses. The adults teach them these skills. There are several free hours each day. Weekends are free too. During the free hours, some of the teenagers learn photography or painting. Others sit around and talk or sing. Each teenager chooses his own way to spend his free time. When people live together, rules are always necessary. In this program, the teenagers and the adults make the rules together. If someone breaks a rule, the problem goes before the whole group. The group discusses the problem. They ask, "Why did it happen? What should we do about it?" One of the teenagers has this to say about the experience: "You stop thinking only about yourself. You learn how to think about the group."